You're listening to Happy Chat, powered by Happy Place.
Happy Chat, the Happy Place podcast with your host, Dave Howell. In each episode, you will learn how to make the most of your happy place.
Discover how the digital profile of your address can free you from the chores of running your home.
Welcome to Happy Chat, the podcast from Happy Place, your home's online digital profile. If you're on your own home but still feel as though you struggle each month to pay your bills, you could be house poor. If you're thinking of getting onto the property ladder, the question you need to ask yourself is, should you buy now or wait? It's a question many people don't ask themselves as they strive to become homeowners. And are you struggling with the cost of running your home? In this episode of Happy Chat, we talk all things personal finance and property with an expert, Lynn James, the founder of Mrs. Mummypenny.
At the end of the day, I'm a regular mum with three kids, sort of struggling financially to bring them up. I just lay it out on the table. I'm literally like, guys, I've got myself into 16 grand's worth of debt, which I did 2.5 years ago, and this is the process I'm going to go through to pay it off. People really appreciate that honesty because they can just relate to that story, because absolutely nobody's perfect. And I'm a bit anti all this, you know, picture perfect things on Instagram and the fake lives that people pretend they're living, because life is hard.
And also, Lynn looks at the future and what this could mean for your money management. This Happy Chat is essential listening if you want to take control of your finances today. Learn practical steps you can take to put money back in your pocket.
Happy Place.
Your home online.
Who's Lynn James, and when was the light bulb moment for you?
I'm a personal finance blogger. I have a website, Mrs. Mummypenny, and all the associated social media and podcast and YouTube channel to go with it.
Sure.
I've been going for a pretty long time now, actually. 6.5 years ago, I came up with the idea, and it was absolutely a light bulb moment. All through my life, guided my friends with money saving tips, and I would always be the go-to person for anything sort of financially related. I am a qualified accountant by trade, so I'm pretty good with numbers. I just had that light bulb moment of, oh my gosh, I could share this information with the world. And it literally was, okay, come up with a name, grab the website, grab all the social media names and start producing content. So that's where it all came from.
So do you think, even with, you know, the raft of information which are online these days, people are still looking for, I guess, those nuggets of information for them that relates to their particular sort of financial situation? You know, if you look at net, it's always pretty high level stuff that's not really related to me. You know, I have specific questions about my financial life, and it's difficult to get those answers, you know, that are related to me, that I can relate to. Is that really where it came from? It was like, can we personalize this information?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a big reason for why Mrs. Mummypenny has been so successful. The last couple of years, it's gained incredible momentum because I've been doing it for a long time. So I've been, you know, putting my name out there for a while. And it's a combination of lots of different things. It's appearing on lots of podcasts, being in newspapers, being on TV, being on radio. And it all just rolls up into this sort of big world. I've got a unique story. But at the end of the day, I'm a regular mum with three kids, sort of struggling financially to bring them up. And I'm really not shy talking about mistakes I've made and some good decisions. I don't just make mistakes, but I just lay it out on the table. I'm literally like, guys, I've got myself into 16 grand's worth of debt, which I did 2.5 years ago. And this is the process I'm going to go through to pay it off. And I plotted that journey as I went through it. Or I've made a complete mistake of my pensions, which I did in my 20s. I'm trying to rectify it. And I also tried in my 30s. People really appreciate that honesty because they can just relate to that story, because absolutely nobody's perfect. And I'm a bit anti all this, you know, picture perfect things on Instagram and the fake lives that people pretend they're living, because life is hard. So people want to read about people that have made the same mistakes as them, but then how to fix it, obviously.
What I wanted to specifically from Fumi was kind of a perspective on, I guess, the outlook, or at least the attitude that particularly younger people have towards money. Yeah, you know, we label these guys the millennium group, which I believe is guys under 30. Do they approach money differently? Have they got a different set of drivers, I guess? You get a good job, there's enough money to buy a house, that drive to become house owners, etc.
Yeah.
It seems to be a defining trait of their parents' generation. Now, it seems to me that's really shifted, not necessarily because the crash has made being a home harder, much, much harder, obviously, but it seems to me that there's an attitudinal change. The under 30, even under 25s, have a different attitude towards finance and money. Would you agree with that?
I think things have shifted. Where do you live?
I'm in the Midlands.
You're in the Midlands. So this podcast covers the whole country, but I speak to a lot of people in the Southeast where it is, the standard of living is gone out of control. And a lot of people under 30 I speak to, it's almost like this thing of owning a house that their parents did or people 20 years older did. It feels like a bit of a unachievable thing.
Mm.
The thing that I fully believe in with money, it's about balance. I'm really not a person that thinks you should put all of your money into savings and investments and put it away and not spend anything and be frugal. I think life is about balance. I think you should have a good time as well as putting money aside for the future. Now, when resources are limited, as they are for younger people, then to save up, I don't know, 30 or 40,000 for a deposit on a house, it's just so hard. So a lot more younger people, I think, are just resigned to the fact that they'll be renting for the inevitable future and maybe for the rest of their lives. But it's shifting. Like, it's not a bad thing. It's just the way of life. And other countries are like that, particularly Scandinavian countries. Most people rent in those countries. So things are shifting.
I guess it's who you speak to. I think you're right. I think there'll always be a group that are driven to be just like their parents, if they can. And I guess it'll be, if Bank of Mom and Dad is available, then fantastic. That group of people will repeat what their parents have done because they have that financial support.
Yeah.
But it does seem to me that the younger generations aren't totally driven by financial gain. They're not. They're more interested in experience. They're more interested in having a balanced life, which does deliver a level of financial security. But that's not necessarily going to mean owning your own home. And it's something I wanted to ask you about. You know, when you speak to people of that age group, do they feel they're a failure? Do they feel that, oh, we failed because we can't do that? We can't own property? Or do they think, well, we're not really bothered about that. It's not a factor anymore.
No, I don't think the failure thing comes across at all. It's literally more of a, we are experiencing life and visiting incredible countries and experiencing all these different things that maybe my parents didn't do. And it's building up those memories, isn't it? It's not building up the things that you own. I don't experience failure at all. I just think it's a shift of what people want.
The other large area I wanted to have a look at was, I guess, money worries. I'd be very interested in getting your sort of take on what your readership is worried about at the moment. And have you seen any trends recently?
I get a lot of messages sent to me from people that read content and it sparks sort of ideas with them. So there's two big areas that come to mind. Firstly, it's debt. And this is never going to go away. And it just feels like it's getting worse and worse. And the average amount of debt people have got is just over £10,000, I think. And that's nothing to do with mortgage debt. That's just credit card debt. So every day I get a message from somebody saying, I've just read your article about £16,000 worth of debt. I've added it all up and I've got X thousand pounds. But where do I even go next? There's the simple tips they could follow to save money or to make extra money. But people are feeling so overwhelmed and out of control. I think there's just growing population of people that sort of don't know what to do. And there are some great debt charities. When you're in that kind of, I don't know where to go, helpless situation, you can't just be reading stuff online because that's just gonna not focus your mind. So I recommend people go to Step Change or Christians Against Poverty, like completely free debt charities that can help you. Citizens Advice Bureau is also great, but they are so overwhelmed with stuff they're trying to sort out for all manner of different issues. So I recommend the specific debt charities just to go speak to somebody, because I think once you speak about it and get it all out of your head, and once it's rolling around in your head, it can be quite destructive. So yeah, debt is just this ongoing issue that's getting harder. And then the other thing, because I've spoken about it quite a lot on my blog, and I write a lot about pensions and just making sure that people have enough money set aside for later life. And we've got this growing issue of gender pension issues. Women, traditionally, we take time off to have children, and then we might drop our hours down to part-time hours. A lot of women take time out of work for a longer period of time, 5 years, 6 years, to have those children. And then what happens later on in life is women often become the carer roles for their parents when they have to be looked after. They're almost fine until they get to the point of having children, because if anything, women earn more than men in that earlier part of their lives. But then women aren't earning so much, so they're not putting so much into their pensions. And so many women have much less pension money than their male equivalents, and it's just growing into a bigger, bigger problem. So that really, really worries me. So I write a lot about empowering women to understand that they need to keep those pension contributions going, and just to understand the impact of, if you take, you know, 6 years out of work, it's not just impacting the salary you're not getting, it's also impacting the pension contributions that you're not making.
You know, trying to talk about pensions to a 25-year-old or even younger, it's always going to be a hard sell, isn't it? Or do you find that younger people these days are a bit more future-focused than maybe previous generations were?
I repeat this message to every young person I speak to, or particularly to people who are maybe at university or just about to leave and go into that workforce, is that very first pay packet that you get, make sure that your pension contributions are coming out of it, because you will never know any different. You will never know that that 8% is the standard amount that gets taken out of your salary now. And obviously you've got an employer contribution, isn't that, as well? So just set that from the very first pay packet and you'll never know any different, because I didn't do that. I got used to earning a certain amount of money, and then suddenly it was like, oh, you want to take £100 a month off of me to put into my pension? I'm 25. That's like so many years down the line. So I just wish that I'd done it from the beginning and got used to it. It's difficult to think when you're in your 20s when you're going to retire, isn't it? But there's a lot of talk at the moment about sort of financial independence and retiring early, which just focus on that financial independence of building up that pot of money so you know that you've got enough sat there that you can get to that magic point of your life at, hopefully that's not in the too distant future, where you've got enough money to not have to work in that job that you maybe don't like.
Happy Chat, powered by Happy Place. To be inspired on creating your home's digital profile, read interviews, opinions and announcements on blog.happyplace.com.
Let's flip it slightly then. Let's assume someone is a homeowner. They're sat there in their nice shiny new property. Let's say they're 28 and they've just bought their home. This whole concept of house poor. I'm sat there, I have a mortgage, I have a home, you know, I've achieved that. Why don't I have any money? You know, why can't I spend my money on that adventure lifestyle which I wanted? How come the two things can't fit together?
So they've scrimped and saved to get that deposit sorted, and now they've got their house, wonderful, but now they've got, whatever, £1,000 a month mortgage payment that they have to make and all the bills on top, because there's an awful lot that goes with this house ownership thing, of course, isn't there?
Yes, I think that's another thing that is not really communicated clearly, I don't think. It's everything that wraps around that mortgage that you also have to fund yourself. You know, there's no safety net there. You have to fund that. And that often gets lost in the conversations, or at least in the rush to sign the dotted line. Because it's great, you know, owning your own home, it's fantastic. Yeah, it is an aspiration, and it can be, you know, brilliant for some people. But the detail isn't there. What's it going to cost me for maintenance, etc., and all the rest of it that goes with it? I don't think that's communicated clearly enough.
Yeah, and also the importance of when things go wrong, and things do. It's fate. Things do tend to go wrong, like three at a time. Like I managed to break a dishwasher, smash an induction hob. Me, not even a child, and the car needed servicing. It all happened at the same time, and that was suddenly like £1,000 I needed to find to fix those three things. There's emergency funds that you need for sort of different things, but you need an emergency fund for sort of house stuff, and then keeping the house looking smart and, you know, freshly painted and nice carpets and stuff, that you do it when you move in, but how soon do you need to redo that, sort of a few years down the line? It's an expensive thing.
It is, and the trouble is, a lot of the time, those are going to go on a card. That's how that's going to get funded. It's going to be on plastic.
Yeah, because most people don't have this emergency fund. Of ideally, everybody should have 3 to 6 months worth of your average monthly expenses just set aside in a cash account, which pains me to leave it in cash earning no interest, but just sat there to cover these emergencies. It's also there to cover yourself if something happens with your job and like you're suddenly made redundant, because again, people don't have a lot of the insurances in place to cover themselves if those sort of emergencies happen. So yeah, very important to have that set aside, but so few people have it. So another thing I bang on about.
When I bought this house, my financial guy, they set the whole thing up. I said, well, what about your sickness benefits or if you're a critical illness cover? So what on earth is that? So what if you were ill and you could not work? How are you going to pay your mortgage? That never even occurred to me that I'd need that kind of cover. But it's something you can insure against if you can afford it. That kind of cover is very expensive, and it still is. I've looked at upgrading the policy I started 10 years ago, and it's still very expensive to buy that kind of insurance.
Are you employed or self-employed?
Self-employed.
I've got income protection insurance.
Yeah, so it's slightly different, isn't it? That's not critical illness, because I confuse the two, and apparently there's two different sorts of insurance, yeah.
There is. See, I don't have critical illness insurance, but I do have income protection. So I know that if I'm unable to do my job, if I fall ill, after 3 months, because I've got emergency money set aside, then my income protection will kick in. I've just sorted it out, actually. It wasn't that much money. I mean, it's very different for everybody, but I'm paying like £30 a month. So it's not lots and lots. And I feel quite reassured. I've got children, I've got responsibility. So I really have to pay my mortgage.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was money management. I'm focusing on sort of the younger generations, the millennials, etc. The whole idea that they're looking for easier ways to manage their lives. They're looking for something that's interesting and different and a novelty. And often that's all linked to their mobile devices, you know, something interesting or an app on their phones. How are you finding that with the people that read your blog? Are they very attracted to all of this fintech, which is about to sort of really hit us big time? The whole thing about linking bank accounts together and other aspects of your life together into something that you can manage on your phone, which, of course, the younger generation are wedded to. Is that a driver for them? Is using innovative technology like that, is that clear trend you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I personally bank with Starling Bank, so I've got all the wonderful features of a new fintech bank. I get a notification whenever I receive a payment or whenever I make a payment. It's all categorized for me. I've got all these clever pots that I can put money aside into. It's amazing compared to the high street bank that I used to have my personal bank at. It's great. And then I love to use all these consolidation apps. Yolt is my favorite one, quite a well-known consolidation app. And it genuinely does help me, firstly, control my spending in a way, because you get that notification come through. What I also do at the end of each day, which is sort of double sort of belts and braces, is I write down all my spending as well into a notebook, just because I'm quite aware that I can be an emotional spender and just get carried away and spend. So the act of seeing it come through on a notification and then I write it down into a book at the end of the day just makes me a bit more conscious about what I'm spending.
I'm with you, yeah.
These consolidation apps, I think, are amazing because you've just got the information there at your fingertips and you can see very clearly. September, I spent £400 on groceries compared to £500 in August and £600 in July. So I'm doing well. I'm saving money. So
that seems to be a trend right across the board. It's obviously focused on younger users, but I think everyone else is sort of realizing that technology can help them manage lots of aspects of their homes. And of course, that's where this podcast sits. Happy Place is one such service. It pulls together all these threads for homeowners, for renters, for landlords even, into one place. And it's that kind of dashboard application of that information to you and me. Is that the kind of thing you can see evolving over time, that we're all going to be using something like that? Because at the moment, we have several accounts scattered all over the place, and no one has the time to manage that, or the inclination, to be honest. So services like Happy Place, they've arrived because the marketplace has demanded it. We need something to help us out, and these kinds of services have almost spontaneously arrived. Happy Place seems to be one that is really getting inroads. It's a place where you can claim the digital profile of your home and all that entails. And I think particularly younger generation listeners to this podcast would find that extremely attractive.
Anything that exists that is going to save you time and hassle, it's a big win for everybody in my community, because most of the people I write for is a lot of women who have really busy lives, and they cannot be doing with accounts sort of dotted around all over the place. Because what that unfortunately means, if everything's got different passwords and got different company looking after everything, those people won't renew that every year. And if you don't renew all these things like insurances and broadbands and mobile phones and, you know, all the rest of it, then you become that rolling customer and you end up not paying the best deal, do you? Because I used to work at a telco company, I used to work at EE, and a lot of the business model works on people not renewing their mobile phones after the 2-year contract was up, because then you're just paying all this money per month, well, you've already paid off the phone. So yeah, these companies rely on customers doing that and switch every year, everything.
You know, consolidating those into one place just seemed to be a very, very good idea.
Absolutely, absolutely. I prefer to have everything in one place, so it makes it much easier for me.
You're listening to Happy Chat, powered by Happy Place.
Your home online.
Finally, I just wanted a bit of sort of future focusing, if you like. We've touched on, I guess, trends in sort of personal finance and how people manage their money. Where do you think this stuff's going? Where do you think the marketplace and how you or I will use these services will evolve into the future? Is it just going to be online services which we'll manage? Is it going to be something more interesting? Banking and finance seem to be accelerating with the open banking initiative, I believe, is gaining pace. Fintech, we've already sort of mentioned. What do you think is happening in the future? Is there anything on the horizon that could sort of transform, you know, your eyes, you know, financial life, or at least how we manage it?
Whoever wins the sort of brand battle with owning your whole life, so be that your bank or, I don't know, your entertainment company, whoever, I think everybody's going to start to build up these models where you can just encompass all the information within it. And people are going to go with the brands who proactively look after their customers, not the brands that, you know, the traditional utility brands that you end up paying standard variable terms, which cost you loads of money. I think customers are becoming more and more aware of who's doing good deals for them, who's looking after them, who's personalizing their websites for them. And I think customers are going to vote more and more with their feet and only stick with the brands who are looking after their sort of entire lives in the best way. So I think what you are doing is wonderful. You've just got to win that sort of brand battle and get that trust, so the customers will put everything with you. And if I come to the end of my energy deal when I'm with you, you're going to automatically find me a new energy deal and save me money. So it's building up those trusted steps for customers.
And you think that's coming out of really the fact that we now have social media? We can all use, I guess, the recommendation economy, if you like. 10 years ago, we couldn't do that. I could not recommend, say, a new energy tariff to someone else or globally to a readership. It just wasn't possible. We couldn't do that. Whereas today, individuals are empowered. If they find a service which is fantastic, they can communicate that with often tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of other people. And it creates that kind of empowerment, that personalization, doesn't it? We couldn't do that a few years ago. It just wasn't possible.
Yeah, there's some really clever things, because I know about all these referral deals that companies do.
Yeah.
You know, like the likes of Bulb and Octopus, those kind of energy companies, they're really clever with their referral things. And it gives friends the sort of power to really share their love of a company with their other friends, because they all have these referral deals where you as the friend get £50 for referring them, but then your friend also gets £50. So suddenly I see these referral links all over the place, and it's just regular people like on their Facebook page saying, I've just switched to this great new energy company and we both get £50 if you switch. It's like you've got that trust because it's coming from a friend, and there's the financial incentive as well. I think those kind of deals are certainly working at the moment. It'd be interesting to see where they go.
Do you think that with those, it has to be a foundation of trust?
Exactly.
When those deals come along, I'd think, oh, well, what's the catch? You know, my initial reaction would be, why are you giving me £50? And what kind of hoops have I got to jump through? And what's that really going to cost me over the long term, etc.? Those kinds of things, I think, have to be clearly defined, don't they? There's been that whole sort of Facebook thing about people recommending products, but of course they were paid to by the vendor, you know, and all that kind of thing. So is it really independent? Probably not in the definition I'd use. That will probably go away as the, if you want to call it, the unscrupulous tactics that are used sometimes goes away as well. And it all becomes more of a level playing field. There was issues with sort of voucher for years, wasn't there, that site? But that seems to have sort of got its act together and it's okay. TripAdvisor was the same, wasn't it, with fake reviews? They've got their act together now. And I think we can pretty much trust what's on there. If I want to go somewhere new, what have people said about the hotel or the guest house? And I'm pretty confident that what's said on there is said by real people. You know, it's not AI-generated review or it's not something by one of their competitors.
I think I would still be inclined, though, because I am still a bit suspicious of those kind of things. If I'm ever going somewhere, particularly like travel type things, I will always put a shout out on either my personal Facebook page or even via Mrs. Mummy Penny, because then it's going to hit a lot more people. Like, who's been to Wells in Norfolk and who's got some recommendations of things to do? And then when it's somebody I know who's actually said it, I absolutely end up going and doing it. So I think that links into certain influencers. And I have built up this brand of being this real sort of vulnerable but genuine person. So I have built up this reputation of people trusting me. So I think if the marketing world, it's almost like brands need to take a bit of a leaf out of some people's books, like me, who are just very open and honest. And then when I make a recommendation, it is believed. I actually use the products I recommend as well, so that helps. Like, if I'm going to recommend Octopus Energy, it's because I'm a customer of Octopus Energy.
Thanks for listening to Happy Chat. It's been great having your company. Listening to Lee and her positive attitude to personal finance really makes you want to take control of your money today. Hearing a positive attitude towards money and personal finance really made me feel that we can all take control of our money if we know where to start.
Thanks for listening to Happy Chat,
powered by Happy Place.
If you would like to learn more about how Happy Place can transform how you manage your home, visit our website, happyplace.com.
It's totally free to sign up and claim the digital profile of your address.
We look forward to welcoming you to Happy Place.
On the next Happy Chat, we'll be talking smart meters. If you have been asked by your energy supplier to install a smart meter or already have one, how can you make the most of the information your meter provides? This Happy Chat will also cover the issue of moving energy suppliers and whether your new supplier uses the smart meter you have. To make sure you don't miss the essential information and advice on this Happy Chat, make sure you subscribe. And don't forget to check out the Happy Place blog. You'll see more in-depth information and insights from experts on a wide range of topics to help you make the most of the digital profile of your home.
Happy Place.
Your home online.
Thank you for listening.